Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebro.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
Starting to feel like autumn. The clocks have gone back in Europe. The cold and dark nights are drawing in. European nights may continue to get harder, but fortunately, the domestic scene's intrigue continues. The biggest fixture of the season so far has just happened, and we're here to recap the past few weeks of Ukrainian football. Mike Yavorsky is back again to help us run through the big events across the leagues, continent, and the windows. So buckle up for another episode of Ukraine Plus Football.
Передача на Кабаєва. Кабаєв на фланг. Гереро бере участь в епізоді. Дубінчак його навіс. Який момент! 1-1! Кабаєв!
But before we dive deep in, we've got the Ballon d'Or this week. So Mike, as you're our guest for now, who are your three picks for this year's trophy?
Well, I'll just say thanks for asking me back on. It's good to be here. Vinicius Jr., obviously, is the best, I think. There's been a bit of talk about him at the minute. I thought Rodri deserved it, and I'd probably put Yamal in there as well. I thought he did a good job. He won the Euros, said it absolutely alight. So they would probably be my top three.
Yeah, good shout there, good shout. Ray, I hope you appreciated my and offered the cap to those people who haven't changed their clocks this weekend.
Hi guys, welcome back. Well, the Ballon d'Or is quite special this year, right? We have a defender nominated. I would go with Dani Carvajal as number one, just because it's unbeknownst to me how he ended up there. Then, of course, Rodri, because I know why he ended up there. And he always tucks in his shirt, so we need to appreciate that. And number three is, the only person I actually saw playing is Vinicius Jr. So number three for me, even though he is probably not the most pleasant athlete, but he is a difference maker.
And Mr. Zorya Londonskandro. Over to you.
Ivan Kaluzhny, number one, of course. No, but being serious, I went for Jude Bellingham when I made my decision for some Ukrainian media things a couple months ago. And I think it sort of still rings true that he probably was the best player in the 23-24 season. Obviously, he's not had the greatest of starts right now, but he played really well in the Euros, got England to the final essentially just through like spurts of brilliance like that bicycle kick and all that kind of thing. And I think that's what just edges him over Dani Carvajal, because obviously Dani Carvajal is a defender, like Ray said. He's not been that integral to game defining moments, but he's still won the Euros and the Champions League. And I think he's the only player or the only starter for both of the Spain and Real Madrid to do so. So I think he certainly deserves to be in that top three for sure. And then I had Erling Haaland in there. But I think in hindsight, I'll probably go for Rodri as well, because he is just the Spanish Stepanenko. And I mean, like, he's been really good.
Spanish Kaluzhny, as they say this year.
Well, yeah. However, we go for that. And I mean, he's been immense. So fair play to them. And obviously a big shout out to Artem Dovbyk, who finished joint 29th in voting alongside his Roma teammate, Mats Hummels. But I mean, yeah, last in the top 30, but top 30 in the entire world. So you got to doff your cap to him. The first, I think, Ukrainian to be nominated since Andriy Shevchenko way back in the old 2000s. And I think our friends at Donetsk Way, Petro Chimera, he's got his classic Excel spreadsheet, and within it, he's got the 16 Ukrainians that have ever been nominated for the Ballon d'Or. And Dovbyk becomes number 17. We don't know, as time recording, how many votes he ended up getting in total. I think Shevchenko all time has obviously leads that. But, now he is amongst esteemed royalty, the likes of Alexander Shulkovsky, who was nominated in 1999, got 0 votes, but obviously still in that big number of players. Obviously, Shevchenko, Blokhin, Bulanov, who won it. Then you got Mikhailichenko, Zavarov, Protasov, Kuznetsov, Demjanenko, even Pavlo Yakovenko was
Ah,
nominated back
get
in the day.
in.
And, so he's in esteemed company there, and hopefully he can obviously continue in that plight by continuing to score goals. However, as we'll touch on later, Roma not having the best of seasons at the moment as a whole.
Can I just clarify really quickly, how do they get the votes? Is it the captains or the journalists
It's journalists,
only?
Yeah.
pretty sure.
Okay.
Thank you for that, guys. Klasichny time, though. I mean, this is where we have to start on our debrief, of course. It's the must-see game of the season. We were all there glued to our screens. Mike, better result in the end for you?
Yeah, it probably was a fair result. I was thinking, could you call it a smash and grab with it being a draw for Dynamo? But yeah, for 70 minutes of the game, pretty much it was very flat from Dynamo's side of things. And then the red card just changed absolutely everything. Yeah, so you could Shakhtar fielded the same team pretty much as midweek. So that was like the stark contrast between Dynamo, who had rested pretty much the majority of the team. So going into it, you're thinking they're going to have a bit more energy about them. But yeah, Dynamo just looked so flat, and they just offer nothing in the final third for me. And the injuries have just, they've hit the team massively. They're missing like Pick Halyanok, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But him, missing him in the center of the pitch, attacking it and dragging the team forward is a huge loss. And you can really see that. And also when I look at them, just Vanat up top as well. I don't, it just by himself just does not work. I just don't think it's a system that works. And when he eventually changed that, it changed the system for the better, and Guerrero came on and supported. But all in all, it probably was a fair result. But yeah, a red card. If you're gonna a red card, what is it, about 68 minutes into a game, when your team have already played an intense match midweek, you've travelled back. It's just silly, and it cost them the game pretty much. It cost them. That's as simple as that. But yeah, probably a fair result. Flatter game than what we expected. But yeah.
Do you see the Vanat issue up front as somewhere that could be a Dynamo priority to change in the January window coming up?
Without a doubt, they need an out and out goal scorer. And you could probably say the same for Shakhtar as well. Do you know what I mean? They've got no one who's going to score 20, 30 goals a season across in any Europe or cups and the league. I thought Guerrero coming in would be a bit more support, but yeah, it's just not working. They sort that out, maybe have a bit of depth in the centre, and I think they could really progress going forward.
Yeah, definitely so. Definitely so. Andrew, were you surprised to see so many Dynamo players rested for the Europa League game beforehand? Or do you see this as becoming a new norm for Ukrainian football?
Well, I was watching Viktor Vatsko's run through of the weekend's games earlier, and he kind of made a similar comparison to what I'm about to make, in the sense that back in the day, Ukrainian sides were usually at the butt end of the opposition resting their players in European games against Ukrainian sides, because they're like, oh, the Ukrainian sides are a bit weaker, whatever, we can afford to prioritize the league and all that kind of thing. And now I think we're seeing sort of the realities of Ukrainian football, and it's like, Well, is there really a point in us going so heavy against Roma when we've got a kind of a big game in the league? Well, the biggest game of our season thus far. Dinamo decided to, well, Sasha Shovkovsky decided to rest almost his entire team in Roma because of the result that Dinamo had to travel back to Kiev for Sunday. So that means they stayed the night in Rome on Thursday night after the game, travel back on Friday, probably didn't get back to Kiev until Saturday at some point, and then they had to play on Sunday. So logistically, it's almost impossible to properly be fresh enough for both matches. So I kind of understand it. But like what Mike said, was it justified in hindsight based on what we actually saw on the pitch, where Dinamo were still second best for most of the game? And they only sort of started building a bit of ascendancy when Kryskiv got sent off for Shakhtar. They started getting a bit more possession. They had a few more chances, but they also missed a few chances, like Voloshin sort of skying it when he should have buried it. His chance, the fact that obviously Karavayev came on late on and ended up scoring sort of his trademark goal at the back post, saved Dinamo really. And I mean, when you're relying on Karavayev, who is good in an attacking sense, but when you're relying on him to sort of be the game changer, I think it sort of maybe talks about how problematic the squad depth might be at the moment. Obviously, we were heaping on praise Dinamo at the very start of the season and going into the early months saying how good they were. And I mean, they still are because they get the job done against the lesser sides. But then when you see them come up against the Shakhtar, which is kind of their magnus opus per se of a match for the season, and then they come out like that, you kind of are a bit disappointed that they're not putting maybe more of a show in. And I think I've got to agree with what Mike has also been talking about, that Dinamo just look a bit toothless in that final third with Vanat up front. Because against Roma, ironically, when Guerrero and Voloshin were playing up top together, they looked kind of a bit more dynamic, a bit more energetic. They kind of like were playing off each other and creating something together. So obviously, Voloshin adds a lot more pace up front. He's not a striker, of course, he's a bit more of a winger, but still, he was sort of a bit more unpredictable, you know, making those jinky runs and all that kind of thing. Even scored and it was given offside. Guerrero as well, decent bit of vision. Those two end up linking up for Timchik to shoot wide against Roma as well. So that seems to be something that hopefully Shovkovsky might return to at some stage in the coming weeks. And also at the back, Shovkovsky against Roma decided to play five at the back. And okay, yes, that's probably more appropriate for a European match, but even in the UPL against a side like a Shakhtar, for example, it doesn't really matter the kind of football we're seeing. What you just want to see is Dinamo getting their chances in front of goal and finishing them, if you're a Dinamo fan. But on the whole, in that game, Shakhtar looked the much better side. They looked to be playing more attractive football. They were getting more chances. They had more possession. They were moving it around a lot better. And even Zubkov had one of his better games that I've seen in recent times. Had a very good chance which hit off the bar early on. And I'm like, where's this Zubkov for Zbirna when he plays, or when Shakhtar are playing in Europe? But maybe that might sort of speak more about him, talent-wise. Regardless, I think the result leaves everything more or less the same as it was prior to the game. Obviously, 6-point gap between the two sides, not unrecoverable for Shakhtar. So it kind of leaves a bit of intrigue in the title race, this four-horse race that we've currently got. But still, you would expect maybe Dinamo to maintain their momentum against the lower sides way into, you know, what we're saying now, the winter break. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes forward. But nonetheless, those injuries that we've just mentioned for Dinamo, I think Popov's out, Ceballos is out, Yarmolenko's out, Pikhalyonok's out. Shaparenko missed the Klasichne because he got cut by something in his kitchen or something like that at home, needed three stitches. So, just random stuff like that happening.
Remember Santiago Canizares' injury? That reminded me of it.
Not
Maybe
from
it's going to
goal.
be
Right.
as significant as this.
You talk about all these injuries, but when Bilivar is there putting in the performances that he's been doing recently, surely everything's going to be okay for Dinamo defensively during this crisis, Sandro.
Well, I think Dinamo actually do have a bit of a problem at the back in terms of knowing who their best defenders are. Like, I was surprised to see Bilivar start against Roma in midweek alongside Popov and Mihovko in a three at a central defensive partnership trio. But he didn't start against Dinamo. Popov got injured, and now he's sort of unknown when he's going to come back. He came on and actually played relatively well, to be honest. And then day after, you're hearing Ihor Burabas talking about the fact that Cardiff City were apparently interested in him. But the caveat around the Cardiff City story, by the way, is an anecdote that he mentioned, and it is essentially Ihor Sorkis was out in Monaco. At the casinos or somewhere like that. And he somehow came into contact, was dealing with the Cardiff City owner. And obviously, Bilivar is Ihor Sorkis's son-in-law. And apparently, Ihor Sorkis was talking up Bilivar quite a bit, saying how great he was and all this kind of stuff, that the Cardiff City owner ended up calling his, CEO and sporting director and all that kind of thing, and try to make it work. Evidently, it didn't happen because he's still there. And obviously, maybe Cardiff City, whose head scout is Ukrainian, he used to work at Karpaty, Shakhtar, I think. Fedchenkov, he's been there, obviously, I think, since the start of the year. He probably had maybe some kind of role in not signing him. In the end there, going off what Bilivar looked like at the back end of last season, at the start of this season, maybe fair enough in that regard. But Bilivar has been given a chance now. Yachuk doesn't look like he can get any minutes or get any starts under Shrovkovski at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses in the coming weeks, especially in the European matches. And then from obviously alongside him, you've got Mahavko, who's still very young, very raw, has got mistakes in him. And I think the question is, like, there were people bigging him up as like the new Zabarnia or anything like that. But so far, I'd probably hold back on any comparisons like that. Just because I think the sort of decision making and maybe even the discipline is certainly not up to scratch, even of a Zabarni who made his first team debut at 18, 19. I think Mahavko's still got a fair bit of development to go. And it's a question of whether Mahavko can reach that level of development in the Ukrainian Premier League slash playing in the Europa League. Ihor Tsakhanouk recently has been talking about the fact that he heard that Dinamo rejected a 10 million euro offer from Porto. Ihor Sorkis apparently denied that there was ever offer or anything like that. Then Ihor Tsakhanouk came out and said it definitely happened because he spoke to the CEO or some kind of director at the club. Regardless, if that is the case, I think that's like, how much is Sorkis expecting for him at this moment in time? Like, is he realistically going to be more expensive than that playing in the current situation that he, in the current league that he's in the current club that he's in? Now that goes the same for all the other players that currently can't move. You know what I mean? So I guess it's a debate that I think will rage on, I think, for the upcoming months, especially once the January window opens and next summer as well.
No, haven't spoken to scouts across Europe over the last 6 months. The reputation of Dinamo's business dealings is unfortunately quite well known, and I think a number of the players may struggle to get the deals they deserve because of it. Now let's flip over to the other side, and Shakhtar. Interesting article I found from Alexander Shashko about the underperformance of Shakhtar, given the fact that last winter the Brazilian boys were brought in, Pedrinho returned as a, almost like a new player as well. Now, Michael, I know you were at the game on Tuesday at the Emirates, I believe. Do you feel Shakhtar are underperforming given the talent they've got in the squad? I mean, Sudakov obviously has been struggling for form this year as well.
Yeah, I'd say slightly underperforming, like we were saying in the last episode, when they go onto that sort of like bigger stage, I think they are going to struggle. For me, I know this might be controversial, I think Sudakov has hit his like potential of where he is now. I don't think he's going to become any better player until he moves. So I think he's going to carry on having half decent games in the UPL. Or good games, and then when he steps up to international football or the Champions League, I think he's going to look slightly underwhelming for me. And I think people are going to judge him as this big superstar talent with a £90 million price tag, and they're going to expect him to be playing like that. Do you know what I mean? And for me, he's not that player yet. There's a hell of a lot of potential there, but I just don't think he is the player that people expect him to be at the minute. The Brazilians, I thought, where the game on Tuesday, I thought they looked quite lively. I thought down the width, like Aguinaldo and Pedrinho, if I pronounce them right, down that width, and Zubkov and Konoplia, I thought it worked really well. It looked lively. They were performing to a decent standard, and they were exploiting Arsenal a lot better than what I expected. Maybe I'm judging them. Maybe I'm judging Shakhtar harshly, but I'd say slightly underperforming. Maybe. I think I was. I think it was because I went into the Arsenal game expecting them to get spanked 6-0, and they've given a half decent performance and nearly beaten them, or nearly got a draw, let's say. So I've come away feeling like we've won the match.
Fair enough. I mean, Rijnik has come out of these few games with a lot of credibility from his performance. Any signs for you guys that he could perhaps step up a level from where he's been playing?
No, I think he's still got room for growth because obviously he was at Vorskla. Then only since last season he's been the number one at Shakhtar after Trubin left, and he's looking good. And I mean, the fact that Shakhtar signed Fisyun this summer maybe also forced Riznik to step up his game with that threat that Fisyun is a great goalkeeper in himself and in his own right. That, listen, I can't make any mistakes here or anything like that, that I've got to be giving it all my all. Yeah, he was unfortunate with the own goal there. Can't really blame him for that, but he saved the penalty from Trossard. He had a good, decent enough performance against Dinamo. And he's been pretty decent all in all in the Champions League. Okay, that Atalanta game, I mean, the defense was absolutely shocking in front of him, so there wasn't too much that could be to be done from that perspective. He was good against Bologna, but now I think the key thing is for Shakhtar is their next two games in the Champions League, and I think that's going to be the make or break of their season. If they don't win these two games, they will not be finishing in that top 24. I think that's without doubt. Young boys coming up next week, and then PSV 2 or 3 weeks after that, after the November international break. PSV, obviously, that is going to be difficult in itself because I think they're not no easy task. But young boys, as we're looking at it right now, Swiss League, they're 10th out of 12 teams. I think they've recently sacked their manager, who came in as a caretaker manager, and then was there for a while, given the job permanently slash, semi permanently. So maybe by the time they end up playing Shakhtar, they'll have a new manager or something like that. But literally, if Shakhtar can't beat them, as we've mentioned, there's acceptance in the current scenario that we're finding. And it's like, it's not the end of the world. It's more just a confirmation of where we are at if Shakhtar can't beat them. So I'm hoping that they can obviously exceed expectations, show what they showed against Arsenal, because Arsenal obviously are one of the best sides in the world right now. But still, Shakhtar had a few chances. They just couldn't finish. Raya pulled off a great save in the last few minutes as well. I'm hoping that maybe some of the more attacking Brazilians get a bit more time on the pitch, even given a few starts, because Pedrinho, the one that signed in the summer of 2021, then left and then came back, he looks pretty decent, or he looked decent in that final stages of that Arsenal game. Kevin, I really like the look of. I kind of like him more than Aguinaldo for whatever reason. Aguinaldo's like, it's very slight, lots of running, kind of good on ball with the ball at his feet, but finishing and fine, just doing anything other than that, he's pretty poor
That
at.
whole game, they had the worst end product
Yeah,
I've ever seen.
honestly.
Like I was saying, a good
So,
game down the wing, but that's it.
exactly. And Zubkov as well, realistically, has not been good enough himself, end product wise, that I feel that someone like Pedrinho should be given an opportunity to show what he can do. If he can't, then fair enough. But it's like, that would be more productive than like a random start to Alan Hram, who started against Atalanta at right back, given his debut, had the worst 45 minutes ever, came off, was subbed, and then we've not seen him again. Whereas, playing some of these better talents, obviously not elite by any stretch of the imagination, I think should be something that Pusic should be looking into, because I think they will add to the game. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know why Kevin's not playing as often as he did last season, because he was unbelievable when he in that first 6 months, getting assists all the time, playing really well. There must be some kind of issue, maybe something to do with training. He's not liking the look of him as much, or something like that. Because it's just slightly baffling how a player that obviously arrived for 12 million isn't getting into the team often enough. And Aguinaldo, who some people, got a few followers that from Brazil, mentioned when he first signed that he was pretty poor. And I mean, he's nothing great to carry on meriting all these starts. And another thing, I think we were talking about centre forwards, and obviously Vanat, he's good against the other sides in the UPL, but he really struggles in Europe. And that's the same for, I think, even Sakan. Yes, he scored 4 goals in the Champions League last year, but he seems to be quite isolated up there. And then, the usual happens. Pusic brings on Traore for the last 15, 10 minutes. He tries to kind of go for something and add a bit more presence. And maybe in the Champions League, that's slightly more effective. But at the moment, it's not bringing any goals. So that has to be resolved somehow. I'm not entirely sure how, whether Aguinaldo false nine doesn't seem to be working either. So we need to see how that ends up in the coming games.
Oh, you've heard it here first, everybody. Let's hope that Shakhtar don't leave Kevin home alone any longer and get
Well,
him out on the
hey.
pitch. But before we move on to the next segment, Ray, great news, mate. We found your soulmate, who's been discussing the return of football tactics back to the late 90s and early noughties. I mean, maybe he's not of a like mind. Maybe he just listened to this podcast in the last episode and really took on board what you were saying and is now trying to perhaps copyright it for himself, as can happen at times. But right.
Just to be clear, it was a bit different because what Tsiganek mentioned was the approach to the game when you don't let the other football teams play football, and that he proclaimed effective in the past. Whereas I mentioned the tactics in a bit more depth, since Dinamo actually used 19 different formations throughout 3 years. From 2002, 2005, right after Lewandowski passed away. And it helped them in the Champions League. And it was about attacking movements, liberation, about playing a sweeper in our reality it would be a sweeper keeper. So as soon as we're going to see any end product from the approach, we might actually point that out. But so far, there is no tactics change. It's still very rigid and it's very strict. One silver lining is that the rotation which happened in the European League, because it's a bold move, and Dynamo could have said that, okay, we have two equal teams, that's why we're gonna let them play, but they didn't, and it's obviously not the case. But it's a good practice, and it's clear that they're prioritizing the championship instead of the Europe. I wish more teams have done it, but of course I wish that more teams actually produced something like Hansi Flick did with Bayern and Real Madrid in the same week, or just Vincent Kompany, right? Because it's still good enough even though he lost. So yeah, something like that. I mean, I'm dream big, right?
My thing is the complete opposite. I feel that I agree with what Sahanek is saying in the sense that Ukrainian side should just go back to what they're good at. Destroying the game on the pitch in terms of making it very hard for the other team to play against you. So, like what Sasha decided to do against Roma, yes, Roma also played a second string side. Let's note that. But the main thing is five at the back, try and defend really well, break down, have like three relatively defensive orientated centre mids that are going to be able to break up play and all that kind of thing, and then try and hit on the counter with two pacey forwards. And that's exactly what they tried. And they actually, if it wasn't for that penalty where Mahavko made that silly mistake, that game could have easily ended 0-0, in all honesty. Yes, Roma had a couple of chances towards the end, and maybe they might have approached it differently had that penalty not happened. But still, they defended really well. They broke down play really well, and then they tried to counter pretty well. It's not none of this sort of passing around aimlessly, trying to, work out a shot that's literally going to pass the ball into the net, as maybe we've seen a bit of Shakhtar doing in Europe of late. I think just go for the pragmatic approach, just bloody back to root one football. And genuinely, I think that's what's going to be the most effective for our sides, especially Dinamo, who seem to have a bit more of a physical edge to their squad compared to a Shakhtar, who where the players are a bit more nimble and that kind of thing. But it's certainly something to look into, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Just to back up what you just said, Andrew, I think Shakhtar is that was exactly what Shakhtar also did with Arsenal, because Arsenal, everybody was afraid of them because they swap formations every 2 minutes, and we see what it ended up in. Just a weird goal for which decided the match. But so far the game looked well. Maybe one of the reasons because Shakhtar went for the pragmatic approach. But even though it might be true, some Ukrainian teams might even look into what Brighton is doing, right? They don't play any midfield at all, so.
When we look across the UPL, what other stories have got you excited over the last, is it 2 weeks since we've met?
Well, Maksimov is back to Wolfsburg, and it's another silver lining for Ukrainian football, because this guy is he likes players to wear only one jersey and with no other jerseys beneath it, underneath it, like it happened in his previous club when he mentioned, yeah, guys, you're just like playing for other clubs, really. You're just putting out in the show. I really wish he would sign for another green white team, but that's dreaming is helpless. Also, I like what Karpaty are doing. They look pretty well. They won the derby and they beat Obolon. And as I mentioned previously, they're one of the most promising teams in terms of coaching in the league. It's good to see top five these days, right? The top five of Ukrainian league, because Alexandria is matched with Dynamo. But I think Andrew can open up on that a bit more than me. Kirbas has some great marketing updates, but we know that Kirbas is tied to that, not to actual sporting results for the most part. And of course, Zoria has been showing miracles of administration by not even benching Antuch, but blocking him, banning him from training with the main team. The guy who yesterday was in Dynamo, and he came back to the club of his life, Zoria. And hey, well, I think I just described the whole palette for you, right? From marketing, coaching standards, playing styles, and administration. This is the beauty of Ukrainian football.
Get this man a CEO job straight away. Did you, by the way, you were talk mentioned there about the Lviv Derby. Did you see that wonderful clip of the junior Carpathian Rock ultras giving it what for two and three? I thought such a wonderful little
That gave me so
YouTube
much
short.
hope for football, did
It
that
really
clip
did. I
alone.
I'm like, oh, the next generation are already flicking the V's. You gotta love it, eh? Absolutely. Yes, Ray mentioned there, Andrew. Alexandria's still plodding along at the top. Do you think they're going to be there once we get to the end of 2024?
Yes, end of 2024, I think they will be. Whether they'll be there at the end of the 2025 May is another question because we know what happens in the old January, February time every year. One thing that I think Alexandria are doing really well at the moment is grinding out results. Whatever reason, and also they've got quite a variety of goal scorers in their team. So Michnev scored at the weekend, coming up with his first goal. Also, their winger Bezerra, who's been really good. He's been contributing pretty well. He's been quite a revelation since they signed him in January of this year. And all in all, even when it's kind of looks like they might be going out for a draw or something like that, they end up closing the game out. And obviously, that helps with what we mentioned, I think, at the start of the season in our preview episode slash early season one, that Rotany has added experience to a very young team. And obviously, the last couple of seasons, they kind of fell short. They ended up sort of bottling it in the final weeks. The season before that, when he was first there, they had some real issues. And, were lucky to stay up, realistically, with how difficult it went with their final sort of run in, where they were like lost like the last number of matches. But what looks really good is this balance between experience and youth and, I guess, quality. So you've got Shabanov at the back, who's added a bit more solidity to the team. Martinyuk's looking like quite a good left back as well so far this season. Kalushny, the aforementioned guy, he's turning it on every week, playing really well in that holding midfield position role. Povilets is still going strong after all these years. And then Filipov, he's really added that presence up front. And genuinely, he's the kind of player that Shakhtar or Dynamo could do with up front, because he just seems to be that guy that can, that will fight for that last ball, that can run onto those chances and get stuck in a bit, rather than a lot more of, Sikan and Vanat. They're more ball into feet, need some chances being created for them, whereas Filipov just goes with the flow and ends up knocking in balls on out of 2 yards, can run onto mistakes and all that kind of thing, because he's been around, done that. He's obviously a lot more experienced. And that shows. And realistically, fair play to them. They've got Polisia coming up this weekend, which is going to be a very big game. One thing that obviously has gone in Rotten's favour of late is that their rivals around them have been, dropping a bit of points. Obviously, Dynamo Shakhtar with the draw. Polisia have had a couple draws of late as well. So that has allowed a slight little gap between the two sides to be opened up. But, fair play to them. And I think that this weekend's game between those two sides is going to be certainly the tie of the round. It's going to be really entertaining. I think we're going to see some goals for sure. Nazarenko in good form. Hutsuliak's back from his concussion that he picked up on national team duty. All in all, I think that we're going to be in for quite a good run in before the winter break at a very minimum.
Mike, have we missed anything? I know you're watching the UPL with a fine tooth comb these
Yes,
days.
yeah. Still watching
Any
every match.
stories slip through the net there as we were dissecting it?
I just there's two teams I don't need to laugh that I love watching, right? And Inhalets are one of them. I know the bottom of the league and Chawner Moritz, right? But the way they play, right? They just play with like utter passion and determination, and they always fight to the bitter end. And that's where you can see with the amount of late goals that Chawner Moritz score. I think they've scored maybe five or six goals from the 80th minute onwards, which are equalizers or winners. And I think that's testament from how well they play. And also, people will have all written Inhalets off at the start of the season, and myself included. And let's face it, they are bottom of the league. But I think they deserve a little bit of credit for beating games that a lot of us had written off. So yeah, them two teams, I like watching them. I like the real passion and the heart, the bottom of the league, the fighters, the unsung heroes. So I want to just give them two a mention. Like Ray said, Kribbs are slowly growing into the league. I think a lot of their games do get interrupted as well with air raids, so probably more than most. So that must take a toll on them. But yeah, I love watching Palicia. I love watching Alexandria. I want a different team to win it this year. But yeah, I'm still loving it.
Would you say Inglet staying up would be equivalent to Bradford City staying up in the Premier League? That one fantastic season back in the day.
It would have to match it. It would be up there. I think I'd feel as happy. I think I'd be there, tops off, running around the streets with them, I tell you. I feel part of the family when I watch him.
You will be the David Weatherall of
Yeah,
Alexandria. Anyway, moving on. Of course, this week the Ukrainian Cup is back with us. Andrew's already got his top off running around the Zoom room.
well, it was quite a full-on midweek because there was only one match that was on the Tuesday. That was Ruch versus Karpaty. Another rematch of obviously that game in the league that we were talking about earlier. This one, the build up, the animosity and everything like that was a lot less than what we saw in the league. I think maybe it's just due to the fact that this fixture came up twice in the space of 8 days, that maybe the hype and everything like that was slightly lost in this second game. And ironically, Karpaty were a lot worse in this one. And Ruch seemed to be, a lot more motivated. Hence why, in the end, they won. Very narrowly, might I say. Piotrowski's long ranger sort of P-rolled into the bottom corner that I think maybe the keeper could have done a bit better on. But, they're through. Kozlovsky making up, all the hype that Lviv is yellow and black and all this kind of thing. Whether you'd call it a Lviv City derby, I think will be highly disputed amongst Karpaty fans and other more hardcore Ukrainian supporters, because obviously Ruch originally is from Vinnytsia, so it's maybe a more of a Ruch, let's say, regional oblast derby of a kind. But still, I think it's probably the most, let's say, ferocious local rivalry that we've seen for a long, long time in Ukrainian football. And I think it's pretty healthy to see, like we mentioned in the league game, there was, abuse and all that kind of thing. I think that it sort of makes it a bit more fun because you get obviously Obolon versus Dynamo. In Obolon, there's a load of people that go to Obolon games that support Dynamo Kyiv when the two aren't playing on the same day. A lot of people live in the sort of northern Kyiv area, so they go and I guess maybe not hardcore support Obolon, but still go and watch their matches and all that kind of thing, despite being in the same league now. Whereas this Ruch versus Karpaty rivalry does seem to be something genuine because especially of all the recent history of the academy players going from one side to another, different personnel and all that kind of thing. It's pretty good, I think, for the Ukrainian football landscape, especially amongst the younger generation, and even like the older generation are having kind of issues and bickering between one another, especially well-known comedian Viktor Rozovey, who used to be a Carpate Ultra. He is now sadly in a wheelchair because he got badly injured in the war when he was fighting out in the east. But he has said that because of a lot of people that he knew in the Carpate Ultra scene that have not gone on to fight, he can no longer be part of that movement or support Carpate, despite the fact that he doesn't have any serious animosity to the actual club itself, but to the Ultra movement, he doesn't really rate a lot of the people that didn't go. So he now supports Ruch. So there's the paradox in that one. Elsewhere, of course, there were seven fixtures on Wednesday, which were kind of full on to like follow it all. Some of them were kicking off simultaneously, some delayed due to air raids and all this kind of thing. And it was just like, come on, guys, we like, I just need to try and follow this somehow logically. But regardless, sadly, the last Druha side left in the competition bowed out so late on. Pro B lost to Bukovina in the 88th minute. Bukovina, obviously, having a few problems themselves in Pershalika. Krivintsov recently got sacked. I don't think they've announced their permanent new manager just yet. So they're into the next round, the quarterfinals. Alexandria completely demolished Uksa, where there's talk that maybe they might be having some managerial change in, the winter break because some of their results haven't been up to scratch recently. But Alexandria, I mean, they fielded their second team and they completely destroyed Uksa in that game. A real nice free kick, really good stuff. Elsewhere, Dynamo very narrowly just about got past Yuri Maksimov's Vorskla in the cup. Interestingly, Shevkovsky once again employed the five at the back formation. Diachuk made a comeback. Guerrero, Voloshin starting up top together. Guerrero getting his first goal for Dynamo from the spot, and then late on into added time, Van Aert ended up scoring, albeit there was a kind of a penalty shout late on in normal time that Maksimov was pretty disappointed wasn't given, and maybe it might have obviously given the hosts a win. At the end of the day, Dynamo were gifted the win thanks to an Isinko mistake where he just literally couldn't hold it, spilled it, and Van Aert tapped in. Polisia saw off Krivbas narrowly 2-1. Khuchulyak once again scoring with his head after the concussion that he picked up on Ukraine duty. Veres beat Obolon. Obolon had a player sent off, Lukyanchuk, because he was wasting too much time taking a throw in. He got a second yellow for that, and that kind of changed the impetus of the game. And Veres ended up winning. But I'm sure Ray will agree, Obolon have got time for revenge because they face Veres again this weekend. So, very quick fire time to do that. Shakhtar narrowly saw off Zorya. We were talking about those Brazilians earlier. They were given some starts, and Marlon Gomez linked up well with Pedrinho. Pedrinho then played it into Lucina Traore, who finished emphatically, and that was the only goal of the game. For Zorya at the moment, obviously, we were speaking about that, and Chuk was having problems because he's in the final year of his contract. He's been sort of sidelined until he signs a new contract. The classic tactics from Zorya, which only I think impede themselves when they put these things in. And also, there's rumours that Bartulovic is being linked with Bukovina, might want him, and then also a few clubs abroad are keeping tabs on him. So that's interesting, to say the least. Even as the fact that Zorya haven't really, I think, announced him as their official manager, I think he's still kind of interim. So that sort of shows the value that Zorya are putting into their manager, whilst other clubs actually genuinely do seem to value his qualities. And they've been doing pretty well in the UPL recently, so I can't knock them. But they played against Shakhtar. Really, what are you going to expect? And then the final match, which was really emphatic, it was the match that has finished the latest. Following the start of the full-scale invasion, as per Archie Valerco on Twitter, who said that at 10:01 local time PM, the match finished after a lengthy delay in Cherkasy. LNZ were visitors to Victoria from Sumy, obviously because Sumy is being bombed all the time. Victoria actually play a lot of their games sometimes in Kyiv. This one they actually played in Cherkasy, but were the hosts. They took the lead early on, then LNZ took it to extra time with an equaliser, then they scored in added time, but Victoria ended up equalising in the 120th minute, which took it to penalties. LNZ missed three out of four pens. Victoria scored three of theirs, and Victoria are through. For the second year in a row, they've beaten LNZ. And LNZ are actually on a quite bad run of form, both in the league and the cup. They beat Inhulets, but before that, they hadn't won since August. So, I mean, that's kind of problematic, especially under the new manager, the Spaniard, who a lot of people were expecting good things from. I think he's probably on thin ice. If they get a few more bad results, they might have to, make do with that. But credit to Victoria. Second year in a row, they're in the quarterfinals of the Ukrainian Cup. Besmantny carrying on with his masterful coaching. And let's see if they maybe get Shakhtar again in the draw. See if they can get revenge in that one. But nonetheless, good to see two lower league sides in the quarterfinals. Hopefully, maybe one or the other, or even both, can make it to. Make it to the semi-finals, which would be interesting.
After this round this week, the cup goes into hiatus until April, when it will return with the quarterfinals. But we'll keep an eye out for the quarterfinal draw, which will take place on Friday. At present, announcements, although that may be subject to change. But moving on, of course, it wouldn't be a Ukraine plus football episode without discussing the national team. The way the fixtures come around these days, they're as regular as UPL matches on their own. Since we last met, we've had games against Georgia and Czechia. Mark, I saw you were out there for the duration. Did you join the Kerala Blasters support club out whilst you were there, or were other things keeping you busy?
I certainly did. I absolutely love him. He is the hero, and we are back. Yeah, positive. After such a negative episode last time, and we were discussing the Georgia team and how we might get turned over by them, we actually came out of Georgia and Czechia and got 4 points. Like I said last time, a reaction over results. Well, I felt like we got both, to be fair. It was enough of a reaction, but the key thing from these games was, yeah, Georgia are a better team. That's a fact. But Georgia came to play football, which I think Ukraine can handle that a lot better. And so it allowed us to play a bit of football. Czechia, teams who Czechia play a bit like Albania, teams who come and stop us from playing football. We don't have a plan B. We don't have a nasty side. We don't know how to break it down. And that is a big worry because if teams realize that, they're just going to bring that game to us, and we're not going to get any results. I was very pleased with the results, and yeah, we'll go again in November. I think it's a big positive. But then again, yeah, it's like we said, games aren't won on paper, are they? Because of the results before, it's hard to enjoy these results. Because now I'm sat there thinking, well, we're still far down the table, we're still chasing.
Andrew, of course, you were there as well. How did you feel?
I mean, I think it was good to get that win against Georgia. It sort of lifted the mood a bit. I think Mudryk himself played well in that particular fixture. Obviously, getting the goal helped his confidence, and he's been looking a lot better for Chelsea this season. Playing obviously in the Conference League a bit more, playing in the EFL Cups and all that kind of thing. He's got consistency. Yes, he doesn't start or play as regularly in the Premier League, but he's still coming off the bench and actually having relatively impactful cameos, per se. So at the weekend, he came on against Newcastle, hit the post, was close to a goal, missed the Liverpool game. He's been playing pretty well of late. He got two assists and a goal against Panathinaikos. He seems to be getting that confidence back. And I think that's what you want from Mudryk, because what confidence breeds is decision making, in my opinion, for him. The fact that he is a bit more bit that swagger about him, where he's shouting at his teammates to give him the ball or whatever, or when they're messing up or anything like that. It sort of means that he is now a bit more comfortable in his own skin. He makes those decisions a bit quicker. He's not dwindling on the ball when he gets it. He's passing it accurately and all that kind of thing. Yes, there's a long way to go to get to anywhere near the kind of level that I think a lot of people are expecting from him, but it's very good signs. And that match against Georgia was a perfect example. He played all right against Czech Republic, but the typical thing that happens with Modric is that he kind of fades out the games, especially in the final 20 minutes or so. And it's difficult for him to kind of get back into it. I don't know what that's down to, but hopefully that can be improved. And I think one thing that we've noticed is that this has been a team. It's another example of maybe what we talked about Dinamo earlier in the episode. If you play a bit more anti-football, results come because Georgia were trying to play this kind of free-flowing attacking thing. Zbirna defended relatively well, played on the counter, and ended up closing the game out. And that's what you want at the end of the day. And do you know, ironically, Maxi Talavierov had a decent couple matches at the back. He added a bit more of a presence. I'm not saying that he should be starting once, as obviously Matviyenko and Zabarnyi and even Mykolenko are going to be back in that sort of right to left hand side. But he showed that the fact that he's also starting for LASK now consistently, that that also breeds, I guess, confidence, consistency, a bit more self-belief in yourself. However, there were still a few lapses in concentration. He was beaten a few times that do get made me a bit shaky because if you're playing against a better team, then you're going to be punished for that, sadly. But all in all, a good window, and the next two ones are obviously very vital. A question, though, as to whether the game is, you know, how that game in Georgia is going to be, because obviously Georgia have recently had their parliamentary elections. There's protests that have begun at time of recording, how long they're going to last, if that's going to have any impact on the game. Let's see how it goes, because it very well could do. It's going to be interesting. And I feel that now that we've got a bit more information on the World Cup qualifying draw, that's going to be in December. There are going to be groups of 4/5 teams. And with the way that the Nations League works, you've got top and bottom are either automatically promoted or automatically relegated. Then, if you finish second or third, you end up playing in a playoff against the third in the league above or second in the league below in a relegation slash promotion playoff. And as a result of that, those fixtures will occur in March of next year. And as a result of that, you might have to be drawn into groups of four as a result of that. And that means if you're drawn in a group of four, your World Cup qualifying campaign doesn't start until September of next year, which means that in June of next year, there will be a potential friendly window for the first time, really, in forever. I think Ukraine will have some actual possibility of playing friendlies against two sides, possibly. And maybe that might be kind of helpful for Dubrov because realistically, ever since he became manager, yes, they had a couple of those behind closed doors friendly against Lechia Gdansk, Brentford B, but I mean, that I don't think really counts in the grand scheme of things. To maybe give some more fringe players time to play, like we saw in this last window due to all the injuries. And as a result of that, that might push them on to, you know, put in better performances. You know, I'd love to see Nazarenko get some more time because he only came on in the final few moments of that Georgia game. He didn't come on against Czechia at all. I'd like to see a likes of a Bondarenko maybe get his debut call up, get some minutes. Maybe a Yarmolyuk just before the under-21 Euros kicks off. It'll be interesting to see, all in all, if Ukraine do get put into the four-team group. But maybe in a five-team group, it might be more beneficial because you have that one extra lower seeded side. And as a result, it might help with Ukraine getting extra points and so forth, helping them make it into that into that higher echelon, I think, of the top two spots for World Cup 2026.
It's going to be a interesting few months ahead with that. And I mean, I suppose the first question is coming out of the window. Any the guys, they're both sort of said when the injured players return, they're going to slot in. But is there anyone in particular that perhaps caught your eye who could be pushing for a spot? I mean, Zinchenko, will he be back for the next window? Dovbyk, is his form being affected, being stuck in a very poor Roma team this year? Any changes that you see might maybe coming up?
Yeah, I think with Dovbyk not playing as well up top.
It was a decent lineup in those games, and there was some rotation happening, and some of it came out unexpected in a good way. So, yeah, we need to follow these next games to be prepared for November. But I think it also depends on who's going to be fit, right? Because Shaparenko is probably going to be out for some time. Tihanko, we don't know. So, and in general, like, what do we expect from these games? Right, based on the club football changes, you know, so the clubs might be preserving their players for the January and February games, which were not the case before, right? In the European tournaments, I mean, Champions League and such. So it has to be figured out as well.
Before we wrap up, Andrew, you mentioned the Mudryk's performances. Do you believe there's any truth in the rumours coming out, potential move elsewhere this window?
Potentially, just on the basis that I think Mudrik, obviously, the fact that he is getting back to his best, you know, nearing his better form, and just this kind of character that he is, where I feel that he does want to be playing week in, week out, maybe they might push for that, because I don't think that that kind of story would be coming out of absolutely nothing, in my opinion. Whether he would end up going to Arsenal is another question, because he wouldn't be getting the minutes there either. So that I don't think would be entirely a productive move for him. I would realistically, I saw some people commenting, you know, a Girona or something would probably be a kind of an optimal move for him, because he would get the minutes there. He'd be playing, for example, the Champions League, at least two fixtures for this season, and it would give him, I think, maybe that boost to that he would be a leader or a star in that team, compared to the fact that there's quite a lot of competition at Chelsea. Albeit, I feel that that competition has helped motivate Modric with Pedro Neto and Sancho coming in. He's now like, yeah, I do need to step up and show my best game, which he is slowly starting to do. And I feel just before we close off, just all round, Mike mentioned Sahankov. I think he was a big miss. On that right hand side, because Hutulak started. I'm still not fully convinced with him, in my opinion. I don't think he's that much of a game changer for Zbirna anyway. Yes, for Palisa, he might be able to get the goal or kind of that kind of thing. But I think from a elite national team level, I think he's slightly off it in terms of just he doesn't have those attributes that maybe even the Yarmolenko had in terms of dribbling, beating players, scoring top bins from just cutting inside. And even Nazarenko, his opposite wing counterpart, who's just got sheer pace and, you know, relatively good passing to assist players. So if Tankov's out of the next window, I think it's going to be tough again, because Zubkov also came into that game against Czechia and had a bit of a stinker, really. Final balls and all that kind of thing, way off it. So let's wait and see. Fingers crossed, we've still got another few weeks before I think, obviously, those fixtures occur. Probably maybe about a week. Rebrov announces his squad. Let's just hope that he doesn't go fully back to the standard in terms of the squad picks, just bringing back all the players that were injured or out of it. And maybe does keep a faith in some of those players that impressed, i.e. Kalužny, who I think certainly deserves to be getting another call up, even though that Brashko should be coming back, Stepanenko as well, fitness wise. Maybe, in all honesty, I would give Filipov a chance. If I personally, I know he's old and it's maybe not like from a future perspective, point of view, but I think that he adds something a bit different compared to a Yaremchuk who hardly plays for Olympiakos, has not scored in absolutely ages. A Dovbyk, who obviously will be the starter, but seems to only be able to get goals from the penalty spot because it's so difficult for teammates to find him, just the way that Ukraine's set up. I don't think really it's his own fault. I think it's just the way that Ukraine play that it's relatively difficult for him to get into matches. And then Vanat, who, yeah, he had a good game against Czechia in September when he scored his debut goal for Zbirna, but I still feel slightly unconvinced. And maybe a window without him might just give him maybe a bit of a kick up the backside to try and put himself back into gear. So let's see how that goes.
Certainly going to be interesting few weeks ahead. All of us here at Ukraine Plus Football will be looking forward to it and watching it with great enjoyment. And we hope you do all at home as well. But until the next time we're all together, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Bye bye.